This is Fresh Air. During the Nixon administration, Tom Wicker's critical columns about the president landed him on Nixon's enemies list. But Wicker has taken a more sympathetic look at Nixon in the new book, One of Us. Wicker is a columnist for the New York Times. He's also a regular on ABC's This Week with David Brinkley. Wicker's new book is not meant to be a biography of Richard Nixon. It's more of a reconsideration of Nixon's personality and political career. Wicker says Nixon's personality helped lead to his political downfall. Wicker says it's hard to find one example that best illustrates this, but when pressed, he came up with this one from 1952.
If I had to pick one factor, there are many factors, and one factor wouldn't be fair, but if I had to pick one and say that this was important, I would say it was the fund crisis of 1952 when he was running for vice president and it was disclosed that he had a fund, mistermed a secret fund, that enabled him to live like a millionaire or something like that. It was not, that part of it was not true, but Nixon was forced to make what many Americans remember as the Checkers speech. The Checkers speech, in fact, considered from the point of view of a man trying to save his career, was a masterpiece because it accomplished that. It may even have saved Dwight Eisenhower's career because Eisenhower himself thought that if Nixon were forced off the ticket, he would lose the election. We don't know about that. That'll never be known. But I think that fund crisis produced a psychological effect on Nixon, particularly the feeling of betrayal by friends. He said that Mrs. Nixon said after that she would never enjoy politics again. It's the first time that he suffered really sharp criticism in the press. It's the first time in what had been a brief but meteoric career that he faced a true disaster, which might have happened. I think that had a tremendous effect on Nixon, and I think it remained one of the major factors in his personality development.
Made him bitter?
Made him
distrustful?
Bitter, made him bitter, made him suspicious, made him distrustful, and developed what, by the time he was in the White House, I think was very nearly a paranoia. Feeling that there were enemies out there who were determined to get him, who were determined to do him in. Even the power of the presidency didn't seem to give him security against that feeling that people were out to get him, they were going to take it away from him. And, of course, they did.
The general take on Richard Nixon in this country is usually that he was strong on foreign policy, like opening up relations with China, but weak on domestic policy, i.e., Watergate, which is part of his domestic problem. But you've kind of reversed that, and you say that his foreign policy really isn't what was cracked up to be, but he was stronger than we give him credit for domestically.
Yes.
Can you sum up why?
Well, in the first place, I don't take it away from Richard Nixon, and it's certainly true that he was very knowledgeable about foreign policy. He had traveled widely. He knew many world leaders when he was president, and he'd studied foreign policy. He thought about it a great deal. So he knew his stuff, so to speak. I question the record, and I think the record is flawed because the reason I think primarily it's flawed is because he saw everything in terms of a Soviet plot to steal a march on the United States, and I think that was a weakness in the way he looked at the world. I think also that his fetish for secrecy, for keeping everything within his own hands, he and Kissinger really ran a very close-fisted operation. So I think those are the basic procedural flaws in Nixon's foreign policy. And other than for the opening to China, I think it resulted in a flawed SALT I treaty where they did not take into account or even try to take into account the question of multiple warheads on single missiles. It led to the destabilization of Chile, which I think is not admirable. It led to the secret bombing of Cambodia and the later incursion into Cambodia, which arguably led to the murderous Pol Pot regime. So I don't think that's a tremendously compelling record in foreign policy. On domestic affairs, and on the other hand, in his first term, before he was hamstrung by the Watergate matter, Nixon achieved a significant degree of school desegregation in the South in the fall of 1970, more than any president before or since. It was during his administration that we developed the volunteer army rather than the draft system. All of the significant environmental legislation that we have today began during the Nixon administration, although he didn't originate it all. Some originated in Congress. He signed it. He developed the Environmental Protection Agency, for example. He was the only president, the only American president in peacetime ever to impose wage and price controls, which while that might be not be necessarily a good thing to do. At the time he did it, it was widely popular, and it was even quite effective for a period. The problem for him later came in removing those controls. But it was a very un-Republican thing to do. If you think a balanced budget is important, then the last one we had was when Richard Nixon was president in 1969.
Nixon didn't talk with you for this book. Did you approach him? You wanted to talk with him?
Yes, I several times requested interviews, none of which were granted. His staff assistant, John Taylor, told me that if I submitted written questions, the president might answer them. I tried that, and he did not answer. Finally, towards the end of my work, I was notified by John Taylor that the former president had told him that if, after I finished my project, if I had any loose ends on foreign policy, why, he would see me and tie up those loose ends for me. That seemed to me to be a relatively limited offer, and it came near the end of my work, by which time I had accumulated a great mass of material, so I didn't accept that offer.
You had no trouble about sending him written questions in advance?
Well, I didn't because, of course, whatever his answers might have been would have determined that. I ordinarily would not, as a reporter on daily work, I don't want to submit written questions. I think one ought to be able to confront the person one's talking to and judge him by or her by demeanor as much as by the text of the answer. But in on longer range matters, working on a book like this, particularly when Mr. Nixon had no reason to think of me as other than a hostile reporter, I was willing to submit certain questions in writing, thinking that his answers would at least be helpful, whether or not I accepted them fully. I was willing to do that, yes, in a way that I would not necessarily do as a daily reporter.
Would you compare for us what you think of Nixon now to what you thought of him when he was in office?
Well, having done as much study of his life and career as I've done, I have more sympathy for the man now, which is to say more sympathy for his experience, his life's experience, as well as particular political experiences that he had had, the pressures that he came under. I see him in a broader perspective. In that sense, I have a broader and more sympathetic idea in my mind of Richard Nixon. In a different sense, do I judge his policies on the whole differently today than I did as a columnist writing about those policies at the time? I think not in any major way. For instance, I believed all during the period that it would have been possible for the Nixon administration to settle the war in Vietnam in the first year that he was in office. They deny that, but having done the research that I've done and studied it as I have and having lived through the period, I still believe that. All these years later, I think the war could have been settled in the first year on the same terms that it ultimately was settled in the fourth year. I thought that the offenses charged to Mr. Nixon that led to his forced resignation in the Watergate matter, I thought that he deserved to be forced out of office, that the offenses he had done, particularly the cover-up, were indefensible. I thought that then. I think that now.
Journalist Tom Wicker is my guest, and he's the author of a new book about Richard Nixon called One of Us. More after the short break. This is Fresh Air. Tom Wicker is my guest. You say you have more sympathy for Nixon now than you did when he was in office and you were a columnist. Is that because history has changed your perspective on him, or is that because you've changed?
Well, I suppose it's both a little bit. I mean, how does one know exactly what happens? But I think it's more nearly that as a daily commentator, or I think it was thrice weekly at that time, three times a week I was offering my commentary. I neither had the time nor the opportunity to develop the kind of perspective that you could do 20 years later. The passage of time is a very important factor for all of us. I don't think that my particular political views have changed all that much, but I think you can hardly get to be an older man. You can hardly develop a broader understanding of things without they're having, in your view of other human beings, having a more sympathetic outlook. I've had people tell me that, they thought, an interviewer told me that when he was in college, he thought Richard Nixon was the epitome of evil. Well, I never quite thought that, but on the other hand, I had a very harsh view of Mr. Nixon at one time, not just because of Watergate, but because of his whole career. Now, as I look at that whole thing in a longer perspective, and as I'm an older man myself and have succumbed to many a vice and temptation of my own, why I do think I have more sympathy for Richard Nixon, as I would have more sympathy for almost anyone, as I have more sympathy for people that I didn't get along with when I was in college or somewhere else.
Is it hard for you to have sympathy for a man who had you on his enemies list?
No, I never took those enemies lists seriously. I would rather have been on it than not on it. But as a matter of fact, I never pictured Richard Nixon sitting down with pen and pencil and listing off his enemies. I just don't think he did that. And I think those things were, I'm not sure exactly what they were. They may have been sort of conversation pieces among White House staff and that sort of thing. But I never took it seriously.
I'm wondering how much we really want to forgive Richard Nixon for what he did.
I don't think we want to forgive him at all, and I don't think he's ever been forgiven. I think that's a mistake, the idea that Nixon has been rehabilitated and all that. I think what has happened is that for reasons that I can't quite place my finger on, the American public is and has been since the late 40s is fascinated with Richard Nixon. But that's quite a different thing from rehabilitation or forgiving or anything of the sort. And if Mr. Nixon, by some alchemy, could become again today the Richard Nixon of 1968, but with the memory of Watergate hanging over him, I don't think he could be elected mayor of a good-sized town.
So you have sympathy for Richard Nixon now, but that doesn't mean you're forgiving him for the things that he did.
Well, who am I to forgive anybody as far as that's concerned? We were discussing the American people, and in the sense of forgiveness that they have forgotten all that and would welcome him back into public office with open arms, I don't think that's true. I know that I've heard people say, mostly liberals like me, during the Reagan years and even during the Bush years, that they'd like to have Richard Nixon back. But I think if actually put to the test, would you really want Richard Nixon to be president again? I don't think there are a great many Americans who would.
Since you write so much about presidents, I'd like to ask you a question about President Bush. After watching how he behaved during the Gulf War, how he ran the war, I'm wondering if it changed your opinion of him in any way, for better or for worse.
Well, I have a rather low opinion of Bush as president for reasons that didn't have much to do with what happened in the Middle East. And what happened in the Middle East, I thought when he first mobilized the United Nations and allied countries in a kind of a peaceful coalition to try to roll back the invasion of Kuwait, I admired that and supported it. And I thought that possibly we were really on the road to a new kind of collective security action. I admired the war less. I was one of those who felt that sanctions should have been allowed to work longer. I still think that there might have been some beneficial result from that. I was one who was wrong in fearing that the war would be longer and costlier in American lives than it was. That didn't prove to be the case. So my opinion of Bush, now that you make me put it into words, I think his management, let us say, of the crisis in the Middle East was very, very strong. His overall goals and purposes, I'm not so sure of.
I want to close with a question that's not related to any of the presidents. This is just about you. You've been a newspaper man all your life. But now you're also on TV. You're a regular on the David Brinkley's Journal show. How do you like TV?
Well, in that particular case, I like that very well because that really requires no preparation on my part. I show up, and with George Will and Sam Donaldson and David Brinkley, we chat for about 10 minutes of the or 12 minutes, perhaps, of the issues of the day. And with four of us talking, nobody gets a chance to say very much. So it's particularly those four guys. So it's fairly easy to do. Now, if you were being an anchor man like Peter Jennings or a television correspondent or something of that sort, which I have never been, that's quite a different proposition. And I'm sure that's not easy. But I've never had any experience doing that.
Tom Wicker, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Tom Wicker is the author of the new book, One of Us. This is Fresh Air.